The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Welcome to another Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons. This week we juggled tiaras with terror as I meet up with the lead actress Stephanie Sigmund and director Gerard Naranjo to discuss Mexican thriller Miss Mala. And I'll be catching up with the cast and director of Junk Hearts, screened at the London Film Festival last week, and featuring a cameo from someone who really should know better. All will be revealed. And if you're a citizen of Hackney in London or just a cinephile with an Oyster card, stay tuned for a free night out in London's newest hip cinema. Henry Barnes will be joining me to review some of the other releases of this week, including Ryan Gosling and George Clooney in The Ides of March and Reese Ifans and Vanessa Redgrave together at last in Anonymous. It's the film podcast that's always the lead, never the cameo. It's Film Weekly. Latin American and Mexican film are in rude health these days. Profits are rising. Alas, so too are the crime statistics. This is the backdrop of a terrific new thriller by Mexican director Gerardo Naranjo and his newcomer star Stephanie Sigmund, who plays Laura, a working-class student dreaming of becoming the state beauty pageant and becoming Miss Baja California. However, Laura's dreams are diverted by gangland war, government corruption, and the amorous attentions of a crime boss. In a flash, Miss Baja becomes Miss Bala, or Miss Bullet. The film is frenetic and festooned with show-stopping steadicam shots as well as thrilling plot twists. So I was thrilled to meet up with star Stephanie and director Gerardo at the LFF in London last week, where Miss Bala had its UK premiere ahead of its national release.
Está bien, Canelita. Yo te voy a ayudar. Pero también necesito que jales algo por mí. ¿Tú qué dices?
Welcome, Gerardo Naranjo and Stephanie Sigmund. Did I get that right?
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for inviting us. We're happy to talk to you.
Yeah. And have you come from Mexico? Is that where you live and work?
Well, we've been touring with the movie. We were just in the U.S. We were in the New York Film Festival, and now we're here. We're tourists for the time.
Yeah. It's a very good journey for your film. New York Film Festival, very prestigious Cannes, where it starts. Is the best place in the world to start, and now London.
It's fun.
Yeah. It's your debut movie.
It's my first movie, yeah. And it's great, the tour. I mean, I wish I could stay more time in the cities, but it's amazing.
Yeah, that's a little sad, you know, that we go to all these glamorous places, but we never get to see the streets or just enjoy it that much. We're working, having interviews, and I mean, it's a good thing, but a bad thing too.
I mean, it's funny for me, the opposite is true. I get to see Miss Bala for, I don't know, 110 minutes or whatever the length of it is, 113 minutes. And I go into the streets of Mexico. I feel like I've been there. You know, it's such a, your film is so. It part of the city and part of the character. So for me, watching your film is like a holiday. It's like being a tourist in some way. It's one of those films for me. It was like disappearing into another world. And for your character, Stephanie, it was totally disappearing because she gets drawn into a world that she doesn't really want to be in or know.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's the most interesting thing about the movie. It's the perspective, no, the point of view. You see everything through Laura's eyes, and this world, these two worlds, it somehow end together, the beauty contest and the crime.
Was that the idea for the film? A beautiful person who's competing in beauty has to also compete in horror, I suppose, as well. You've got the two sides of Mexican life or everyone's life.
Yeah, I think this. This feeling is very present in everybody that I know, you know, a feeling of fear about the possibility of crime getting into your life, and it's ever present.
A lot of films, and I'm, you know, I love the buena onda that is sweeping Latin American cinema, that began, I think, with Amores Perros or something like that. I noticed that Caraná is your production company, so yes. Gael García Bernal and Diego Luna, they were part of the process. You had to work with them.
They are the executive producers. That means that they put their company to help us to produce the film. Contrary to what people think, that they are funding and giving their money to the film, that doesn't happen, sadly. You know,
that's a producer's role. Yeah. The executive producer, they're too big. They sit there and say yes.
Yeah, they help us to make the movie, but they are great colleagues. You know, they are very supportive of the things we did. They're very supportive of Stephanie and me, and you know, I think. It's a movie we felt we had to do, and I think the biggest role they played, Gael and Diego, was just we discussed a lot what kind of movie we should be making, you know, what kind of movie we should be making about the realities in Mexico, the crime wave, and how should we, what's our position towards it.
Exactly, because famously the two of them in Y Tu Mamá También was a beautiful love story, but it also had the social realities that creep in, and I was interested that that's what I see a lot in Mexican films, is that fear of kidnap, that fear of violence, the inequality in society, the corruption. I find this kind of attractive. I don't know how people in Mexico respond to seeing their world shown like this. How have Mexican audiences responded to Miss Bala, Stephanie?
Well, it's like 50-50. Like, a lot of people really think it's a good idea to show a film like this, of this perspective. And also a lot of people think that we are wrong showing this part of Mexico, because you cannot say all Mexico is this.
We wanted the controversy, the arguing, we wanted people angry and just like hating the movie, and we wanted people loving the film. And that's what is happening. The film is already in the fifth week of showing in Mexico. It's doing very well in the movie theaters, and that's what we want, you know, just people to start talking and people disgusted with reality in some ways, and start, you know, taking responsibility of the lives, our lives, you know, in our world. We had to start taking responsibilities. I think we were very passive in the past, and we're being charged for that.
Absolutely. So now, Stephanie, I said this is your film, your first film, but it's not the first time you've been working. You were a model before, is that right?
Yeah, I was a model since 15, since I was 15.
Doing international work? Is that why your English is so good?
I travel for some jobs to Europe and to States, but mostly in Mexico. My dad's American, so that's how I speak some English.
And tell me about Laura. Tell me about Miss Bala, or Miss, I suppose it's Miss Bullet in English, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Tell me about her character, because you know it's a difficult, you know, for your first role. I mean, I know she's a supermodel, Gerardo, but you know, you put it.
No,
you put
a super. I never made it.
Okay, a medium model. maybe, but you put her. I mean, you know, the catwalks and fashion shows are hard work, but I mean, poor Laura, just to get in a beauty pageant, she goes through a lot of shit.
Well, I needed her in that world, you know. When I met, I knew her. She was in a casting for a shampoo commercial.
She's got nice hair.
So I saw her in a video file, and I felt this energy, you know. I felt she had something that I was looking for, but I wasn't sure she was interested, you know. So then I met her. I told her, you know, many lies of what will happen, the things she had to do to make the movie, and I lied to her saying that it was going to be much, much more difficult and many bad things will happen to the in the story. And she seemed interested, and that was for me the most important thing, you know, because for me the most important thing I needed is a hunger in her for, you know, to go after it and just to fight and to, you know, be able to make sacrifices. I knew the making the movie for her was going to be a very intense experience. When we were making it, it was super hard, you know, in many
it
times.
Was it hard for you?
Super hard. I'm super frustrated. And there was like a lot of dark moments. But I think.
You mean as an actress, or yeah, as a, you know, to go to psychologically or actually physically shooting
both.
Was horrible.
But both. I was sometimes I was really, really tired because. I mean, I think the emotional part and the psychological part is the most difficult, but I also had a lot of bruises and everything.
Yeah, because you're like falling out of windows and jumping everywhere.
Yeah,
it's no life. That's what, modeling's easier.
Modeling's easier. Well,
is it?
Depends. Depends how you see the...
Yeah.
And what you are able to give of yourself.
Mm. So those skills, you found them very useful for acting. I mean, you don't find it difficult to... It's the same thing when you're posing or when you're striking an attitude as a model.
No, I think it's the opposite. Because you have to stop posing to start yeah. acting, actually.
Yeah.
I think it was like, for me, a searching about what really a passion, like feel passion about something, not just like cool and good and enjoying. So it's like more of a challenge to me. Mm. And I think Laura, it's very interesting because Laura, it's a innocent girl and it could be a very good thing for a person, and in this world she's living in, it's a flaw.
I love some of the camera movements you have. It's actually always on the move, and I love the music and many of the scenes. It's actually really, you have clearly a great sense of cinema, I thought, from it. And you now, Stephanie, are you an actress now, officially? Can we say that that is your new job?
There are different opinions about that.
I thought so. I mean, I never seen you as a model. I'm sure you're good as that. But
that was funny. I was funny, I can say that. No, about the acting, I mean, I hope I can do this as long as I can.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's the same with all of us.
If it's possible, it will be amazing.
Okay, well, I think you can, I give you permission to do another film.
Thank you.
And you as well,
Gerard and Ranjo.
Very much enjoyed Miss Bala, very exciting. It's good to see a film that's, I don't know, got a sense of kind of story to it, so much story. And I've seen too many films that nothing happens. Well, you couldn't say that about Miss Bala at all. So, great performance, Stephanie. Muchas gracias. Hasta la próxima.
Thank you. Muchas gracias.
And Miss Bala is on general release here in the UK from this Friday, the 28th of October. It's exactly the kind of cool world cinema that will be playing at the newest cinema screen in London. Hackney is about to get a sparkling new picture house cinema. And if you want to see it in all its sparkly glory, you can from Friday the 28th. So, sorry if you're out of town about this, but through Guardian Film Weekly and the Hackney Picture House, you can get a pair of tickets for free. All you've got to do is turn up at the cinema between 12 midday and 6 p.m. this Friday the 28th and utter the code word, Guardian Film Weekly. And the first 100 people to do that will get a pair of free tickets to see any film you like at the cinema's four screens. It's a first-come, first-served situation. For that cinema address and details of programmes, just visit their website, picturehouses.co.uk, and tell them Guardian Film Weekly sent you. Now, with beauty queens in mind, we got rid of Zan Brooks this week and got a younger version. Henry Barnes joins me now to review some of the week's other releases. Welcome, Henry. Nice to have you on the pod.
Hi, Jason. Thanks a lot.
This week, we're going to look at The Ides of March, then Anonymous. We've also got Tintin to uncover. Let's start with The Ides of March, which is out this week. It was at the American Express Gala of the London Film Festival. It's a political thriller with George Clooney and Ryan Gosling. What more could you want?
Everybody who turns 18 or graduates high school gives 2 years of service to his or her country. It can be in the military, Peace Corps, planting trees, I don't care. And for that, your college education is paid for, period.
We do all of that right here.
No, sir, you don't. Not all the way. Do it all the way. Mandatory.
Paul likes this.
Mm-hmm.
You're my brain trust.
The beauty of it is that everybody who's over the age of 18 or past the age of eligibility will be for it. Why not?
And all of the others...
Can't vote. Too young. Too bad.
Well, as people say, yes, George and Ryan, I mean, you know, two of the biggest the up-and-coming and, you know, one of the major guys, George Clooney, he's also directing and starring as a political candidate, a presidential candidate, no less. Would you vote for him?
I wouldn't vote for George. I think he's great behind the camera, great in front of the camera. I'm not sure about him in office, though.
Well, the character that he plays, would you vote for that guy? He's charismatic, he's kind of good-looking, he seems to be liberal-minded enough. I mean, there's a guy in the White House right now who's doing that, and he doesn't seem to be getting it too easy.
He seems to be the Obama in disguise, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think George Clooney said when this film came out that they were thinking about releasing it sooner, but at the time, the mood around Obama was too kind of positive for people to really accept the film. And now that we've all become hardened cynics about this new administration, he's ready to release the film out there.
Yeah, it's quite a dark view of politics this film exerts. I mean, everyone sort of think, well, George, you're going to run for president like Ronald Reagan before you. But I mean, his actual kind of view of politics is that it's an impossible, dark, backstabbing, horrible, almost classical Greek tragedy kind of world.
Yeah, there's absolutely no way that anybody in the film can win. It seems everybody's compromising themselves and everybody's playing dirty to get what they want, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, I kind of looked at Ryan Gosling is sort of our chorus in this tragedy. He's the sort of young spin doctor who really, you know, is a bit idealistic and very good, and we're hopeful for him, but even he gets muddied and morally compromised by the world.
He did, but I'm not too sure how muddied he is to start with, because there's a feeling that he might have dabbled in the dark stuff before.
Well, he's a spin doctor. They're all evil.
From the off.
PRs, yeah.
And for me, Ryan Gosling was probably the problem with the film, in that what worked so well for him recently in Drive, in this kind of blank, almost a cipher for something else coming through the film, didn't really work in this, because we didn't get enough from him when he turned, and when that turning point came, that he sullied himself.
Yeah, I kind of thought he was thinking about whether does he want in or out, and each time, like The Godfather, every time he wants out, they pull him back in.
Yeah, I felt like he was feeling like that about the film as well.
Maybe we shouldn't have done situation. This. I should get paid more than this. Liberal stuff. I mean, the cast is terrific, isn't it? Philip Seymour Hoffman and Paul Giamatti, the kind of older, more wizened people.
Yeah, and Evan Rachel Wood is the kind of young, naive intern.
See, she's even more naive than Ryan. I mean, Ryan's not that naive. He's that he gets, no. You know, that he gets, you know, compromised in the way that she does. Women always end quite badly in George Clooney films, it seems to me.
If they're there at all.
Yeah, exactly. It's that clubbable locker room machismo thing that his films seem to have.
Yeah, although, I mean, for the part that she had, I felt that she held it up pretty well.
Oh, yeah, it's been a while since I've actually seen her. She was very good in the, what's that Kate Winslet miniseries, the Mildred Pierce.
Yeah,
she was in the last two episodes of that. I mean, it's a great part, but she was terrific in that as well. Yeah.
And also great, I thought Giamatti and Philip Seymour Hoffman were fantastic as these kind of warring campaign managers on either side. And they're both actors that I feel that they can kind of play stereotypes of themselves or tend to get typecast in a very similar role. But both of them here kind of really up their game and played against type.
I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. Zan Brooks in Venice, when we saw it there, he was a bit less kind of, you know, positive to me. Where are you putting yourself in this swingometer?
I'm very much in the middle. I'm on the fence about this one. I'm not going to vote either way.
It's people like you that make politics such a hard business, Henry. I'm asking you to decide one way. I don't want that a repeat of Florida. Thank you very much. But I like it. I think it's going to go quite far. I think there's Oscar nominations abound. But you never know. Politics is a funny old game. Henry, this week has also seen the arrival of Roland Emmerich doing Shakespeare. Now, if you've seen Independence Day and Godzilla and, you know, all the other blowing stuff up, 2012, whatever they used to call that movie, it seems very odd to find him back in 16th century London under Queen Elizabeth. But nevertheless, here he is with a story about how Shakespeare did not write what we thought he did.
Henry, how many people were at that play?
I'm not sure. 2,000?
Maybe more.
And how many performances are there of a play like that?
Five or six, I suppose.
New service. So, by the beard, 10,000 souls, all listening to the writings of one man, the ideas of one man. That's power, Essex. And if there's one thing the Cecils understand, that is power. New service.
And since when did words ever win a kingdom?
I think I'll keep my sword. Thank you very much.
So, Henry, this film would have it, as far as I could understand, that Rhys Ifans actually wrote it. Ray Spall was kind of decided to be Will Shakespeare as an actor, and he took all the claim. But actually someone else wrote it. Ben Jonson kind of had a role, and the Queen herself, who is Vanessa Redgrave.
There's an awful lot going on here, yeah. And it zips back and forth between 3 months earlier, a year later, 2 days before. And somewhere in there is Ray Spall as a kind of drunken, idiotic Shakespeare.
I like Ray Spall a lot.
And I thought he was fantastic,
But I've seen him quite a lot recently in that Shadow Line on TV. And I keep thinking, oh, that's a great, you know, cadence that you've got there. I think he just needs to stop doing it once so I can see if he can do anything else, if there are any strings to his bow. But nevertheless, yes, as Will Shakespeare, he is very good, nevertheless. But what, I mean, what's the idea behind this film?
As far as the idea that Edward de Vere, the Earl of Oxford, was the original writer of the Shakespeare plays, and that Shakespeare, as we know him, was just some idiot that they grabbed off the street to take credit for it. And I guess he was doing this, Edward, so that he could express, first of all, political views that he had about the succession race at the time, which might not have been too popular, and also his kind of love for Queen Elizabeth, who apparently he's been bonking all the while.
Yes, a long time ago, though. Yeah. More than three months
before,
earlier.
Sorry.
Yeah, because it's a bit weird. Yeah. I mean, Vanessa Redgrave, as regal as she is, you wouldn't, would you? well, you shouldn't.
I don't know.
And you shouldn't admit it if you do. The whole kind of, you know, reconstruction of Elizabethan England by Roland Emmerich, I mean, as I say, he's a man who normally blows up Paris and kind of dinosaurs rip through New York. The Ice Age comes to modern New York. Global kind of scale. I'm not sure that he could quite manage the intimacy of the Globe Theatre compared to the kind of, you know, special effects of a Hollywood studio.
Yeah, and yet his kind of handling of London at that time, I think, is something that he really takes authorship of, and that it's a really interesting way of presenting the city.
Digitally.
Yeah, and to me that is the merit of the film. Mm. The rest of it feels like, there's a great part where there's a fight scene, and it feels like Roland Emmerich has been building up and building up to let himself go for this fight scene that he's familiar with and he's ready to.
It really does catch fire at that point.
It does. Literally.
With the globe smouldering in the background, muskets being used, cannon fire,
sword fights.
Yeah, exactly. And you're thinking, right, why did you bother with the previous 95 minutes of talking, which you clearly have no affinity for, especially in another language, where he's German anyway. Normally he speaks Hollywoodese, and now he's speaking, you know, the verse of the bard.
And so much of the dialogue of the film is about the power of words and how words can change us and shape us, and yet when you get down to it, all Roland wants to do is still blow stuff up.
Exactly. Well, I suppose they were pretty warlike, those Tudors, and you know, would you go and see it if you weren't forced to by me?
No.
Exactly. No one would.
The power of words, right there.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't encourage me. It doesn't bring people to Shakespeare, does it? No, it doesn't. Give us more monsters, Roland. Stick with what you know. Talking of monsters and fun, you've seen Tintin this week, haven't
you? I have seen Tintin.
Or to give it its full title, The Adventures of Tintin,
The Secret of the Unicorn.
With a nice colon in the middle. Suggests to me that there are many more adventures to come, given the Herge output. So this one, please. Directed by Steven Spielberg, produced by Peter Jackson, in motion capture.
Yeah, I think Hergé said famously that Steven Spielberg was the only person that could make Tintin on the film. And Zan Brooks said on our first review of the film, that in fact he isn't. He's had a real trouble doing it. And I have to agree with Zan. I think while this is a really interesting story, and of course, you know, Hergé is famous for his adventure stories about the boy reporter, while the story is great, the visuals are disappointing in the extreme, and really? It's very cold.
Isn't that the point of it, to have visuals? I mean, why do it if the visuals aren't good? You know what I mean? Because it would have been fine if it was live action, but it's not. It's done in motion capture. Mm-hmm. We're just going to have a little listen to it, because if the visuals are so poor, perhaps the audio would be more exciting.
This ship was stolen from my apartment less than an hour ago.
I'm afraid you're mistaken, Mr. Tintin.
There's no mistake. It belongs to me.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure. I took it home, I put it on a cabinet in the living room, and then Snowy chased the cat and knocked it over, and it fell. This isn't my ship.
No, indeed.
Well, that's Billy Elliot as Tintin. Oh, sorry, Jamie Bell as Tintin. Can you tell it's him?
You can't tell by the face, but then you can't tell much by the faces in this, and that's the problem. I think that if they've used motion capture, they haven't used emotion capture, if I can get away with that.
Yeah, you can get away with that. It's rather good. It's better than Roland Emmerich came up with in Anonymous, I tell you. What's the point, then, if they don't look like... I mean, Andy Serkis doesn't look like King Kong or the Ape, but he inhabits those roles well. Is this well done, or do you think there's kind of... Andy Serkis is always the go-to guy for motion capture. Is he the best in at it, because the rest seem a bit plodding to me.
I think there's nothing per se wrong with any of the performances in the film. Circus is great. Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are very good as the Thompson twins. You know, you could always see them as the perfect model, modern model for those characters. It's just that when you get down to it, the adventure scenes and the sequences that are to do with, you know, a hotel rumbling down a Moroccan hillside or Tintin of Haddock fighting on a pirate ship are fantastically done. And then when you get close up on faces or any kind of emotion supposed to be shown through the face, it just looks like one of those rubber toys that you stick your fingers into and you move the face around.
So do you think, it seems to me from what you're saying, and I haven't seen this one, but I have felt this before in motion capture, that it's fine for a sequence, for a grandstanding sequence, but the emotion that is used in storytelling with the close-up, mm-hmm. it just doesn't work. Like, it probably doesn't work in... Do they do close-ups in comic books without... They have those bubbles that are going, ouch, I mean, that is the emotion of comic books, always a problem for me.
Yeah.
Do they need to change the way they tell the story on film if they're going to properly capture the excitement or whatever it is, juvenile thrill of the comic book?
I think there were some rumours of them mixing up live-action and motion capture, and to me that would have worked far
better.
Yeah, I
would have a problem with that.
I mean, who doesn't want to see Jamie Bell being Tintin? I think that's a great idea, and Circus seems the perfect fit for, you know, a kind of drunken gadabout like Captain Haddock, and he does the motion capture stuff fantastically. It's just when it comes down to faces, it's the same problem that you have in, say, video games, in that you can't capture human emotions on the face yet with the technology they
not
have available.
Yet, exactly. Yeah, even with the best in motion capture. It may be a franchise for Spielberg. We shall wait and see. More Tintin. Doesn't really excite me. I never liked Tintin. Is that fair? Is that my man? I didn't
shame,
want to be a reporter because I saw Tintin. All the President's Men I saw with real people in it. That's what made me
and
want
yet
to be
he never
reporter.
Does any real writing anyway.
No, I always wonder, where's the paper? Where's the big story? Where's the scoop? If I miss scoops as often as he did, be out the door, I tell you. Great fun to have you on this week, Henry. You can, of course, see Henry's musings, writings, videoings and bloggings on the best film site on the web, guardian.co.uk/film. Now, it's a time-honoured tradition for directors to cameo in their own films, but probably taboo for critics to do so. So our next film is a taboo-breaking work then, and the critical cameo is by none other than myself. So I formally and unreservedly abandoned my critical faculties when I attended the London Film Festival world premiere of Junk Hearts by first-time filmmaker Tinji Krishnan, starring none other than Eddie Marsden and Romola Garroy, the glamour of it all. If you are going to see it, I play the barman right at the beginning of the film. I'm rubbish, actually, so I don't abandon my critical faculties entirely, but working with that lot, well, I'm put in the shadows. So I met up with Tinji, Eddie and Romola to get a very personal perspective on this year's London Film Festival at my own world premiere. Well, I'm in the light bar at the View Cinema. It's the London Film Festival, and it's the premiere of my film. So I'm very pleased to be here.
Yeah, I'll have a gin and tonic. Oh, sorry, you're out of character, Jason. I'm so sorry.
That's Eddie Marsden, one of my co-stars. Romola Garroy is here. And the director, Tinji Krishnan. Without you guys, I'd be nothing, really. It's just something. What did you feel?
It's your performance that really much held the film together, I think. I mean, without you, I'm not really sure it would have worked.
Well, you wouldn't have been drunk enough to go and have sex with that bloke. So there you go, it's all my fault. What did you think when you came in and saw me sitting there?
It was, without a doubt, the strangest working experience of my entire life. And all the way through, I was thinking, if you review this film and you give me a really bad review, there will be one reason why, and that's because you were sitting there throughout the entire scene.
The reason is
looking quite critical
because you hogged my shot. I used to review you as like a very generous actress. It's not true. You want to try fading into the background.
You can't. It's very difficult to be generous when you have a head as big as mine.
But you're all. It is the director here, Tinji. It is a brilliant kind of bit of work that you kind of pieced it all together. It's your first film, which I don't like to say is remarkable. You know, any more remarkable than it being your tenth film. But you were so calm that day on set. She exuded some kind of a zen-like kind of efficiency and power as well. What, was she like that all the time?
Yeah, well, she was pregnant, so that was just her trying to keep from throwing up, I think. No.
I had a little plastic bag that I carried around with me. I threw it up a few times on Brick Lane.
I've done that and all.
Yeah, Stephen Polyakov has his pencils, Tinji Krishnan has her sick bag. Everybody has their prop.
What's it like for you, Eddie? I mean, I know you kind of grew up around that area where we were shooting, Bethnal Green Road, we were shooting. That's your manor, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We had to stop a lot of times, cause, especially on Brick Lane, because a lot of the people knew me and kept coming up and saying hello to me and talked about old school teachers and things and nights in Bethnal Green, Nick. So, but it was good fun. I enjoyed going back there, yeah.
Was there anyone there said, I said you'd come to nothing?
Yeah, there was a few girls who said, why don't you call me?
Yeah, right.
No, but, I mean, I know now. It's sexy being a film star, do you know what I mean? I've had many more offers since being on screen. No, I haven't, ridiculous. It's what I did appreciate was how difficult it is. And, you know, what a brilliant job you all do. You especially, because you sort of jetted in and out. You were there 2 or 3 days.
Yes, there's absolutely no way I can say with any sincerity that it was a difficult job for me standing next to Eddie, since I think I did about 4 full days' work.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. It must be fantastic. You've been at the LFF before. Have you been at the LFF before, Romola? Yes, of course. And this is your first time.
It is, yeah, it's amazing. It's like the Glastonbury of film festivals. It's brilliant.
A little bit cleaner.
Yeah.
Well, have you been to the toilets in the Odeon West End?
No.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Romola, Eddie, brilliant. You've got to go and speak to other journalists now because I'm no longer a journalist, you know.
No, well, this film, I thought you were the heart of the film, so that means we're junk.
Yeah. Enjoy the Q&A, enjoy the show. I'm going to come and watch myself.
Thank you.
I won't critique myself. You can critique, Romola.
Yeah, I'll give you a review afterwards.
See you later. Ah, the hubbub of an LFF world premiere. I have to say, it was very exciting being part of it, and I just sort of feel very, very favourable to the crew. It is a very powerful and strong film featuring a brilliant performance by Eddie Marsden, which, you know, should anyone actually get to see this film, might get him some awards. You can get to see Junk Hearts. It's part of Soda Pictures' new British Cinema Quarterly, a movement we highly admire on this show. It gave the world Skeletons, for example, which won at Edinburgh, and then went on to a good life as it tours the country. Well, Junk Hearts' tour begins at the Renoir on Halloween, October the 31st, before playing many screens around the country. For information on how to see it when it's accompanied by its director and some of its stars on its tour, go to nbcq.co.uk and look out for me. And that's all for this week. The music we've been featuring in this edition is, of course, the wonderful Gershwin score and songbook to An American in Paris, which, a newly restored and shiny and brilliant as ever, gets a re-release this week as part of the BFI's Gotta Dance series. It's absolutely brilliant. Don't forget, if you're in London this Friday the 28th and want to snatch a free pair of tickets to London's youngest, freshest cinema, the Picture House in Hackney Central, between midday and 6pm is the place to be. The first 100 of you to say Guardian Film Weekly will get in for nada, nicks, bupkas. Brilliant. But from me, Jason Solomons, and Film Weekly producer Jason Phipps, enjoy the cinema wherever you are and however old it is. See you next week. Bye-bye.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.